Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
on KDXU. I'm Andy. Thank you for tuning in today. It is Mayor Thursday. No mayor today. But I do have a congresswoman coming on in about 20 minutes. So, I don't know. Congresswoman? Pretty good, I think. We'll take it. I'm Andy. In the meantime, I've got a couple of things I want to talk. I want to give you, get you updated on some of the news and maybe a little commentary on the news. One of the things I found, maybe slightly frustrating is, since my newsman has taken another job and moved away, I've been doing the news by myself here in KDXU. It's been a couple of months. And, as I do the news, I present it as unbiased as I can. And it's not complete. We're all born with biases as fairly as I can. I guess the best way to say that. And, but sometimes I just want to, hey, can I talk about this for a minute? But there's not, number one, it's not the format. And number two, it's not the time to talk about some of the news items that pop up. But we're going to do that a little bit today. It kind of leads into my whole thing about bias. And I remember in college, they used to say, well, you're a journalist. You have to be unbiased. I swear, that's exactly what they taught me. You're a journalist. You have to be unbiased. And for all the way through journalism school, my first few years of being a writer, I believed that. Yeah, well, I'm a journalist. I'm unbiased. And then it started to sink in. Reality started to sink in for me. There's no such thing as unbiased. There is no such thing as being unbiased. You are, by simply existing and having the experiences you've had and living and your family and your friends and where you went to school, everything about you is biased. There's something about you that, you know, you can't even help being slightly biased. But what they should have taught me in journalism school and what I've learned since then is you can be fair. You can be equal in representing everything, but you know to be unbiased is absolutely 100% impossible, because that very word, the very idea that a human being could be unbiased is a ridiculous notion. It just doesn't happen. All right, that's my little soapbox there. Now let's talk about some of the news stories. So yesterday morning we reported on a crash up by Leeds at milepost 22. A stolen pickup truck was rolled, and the suspect driver and the passengers were injured. One of them seriously injured. And so, yeah, that happened. But then as they're cleaning that up, so that happened around 6 a.m. yesterday. At about 8 a.m., a lady came flying through in a Nissan, little white Nissan. Now, they're cleaning up the crash at that point. They're just about done. In fact, kind of the last thing you do as you're cleaning up the crash, you send a street cleaner through. So there had to still be, you know, officials and, hey, slow down, accident, all kinds of stuff like that. But somehow this person didn't pay attention, hit the street cleaner at freeway speed, just boom, sent the street cleaner spinning, sent the Nissan out of control, which was then hit by a Jeep. And sadly, the woman inside was seriously, critically injured and actually trapped in the vehicle. They had to be extricated. She was taken to St. George Regional Hospital. We can't give you medical updates on people anymore because they've changed the laws and, you know, the HIPAA law. We cannot. I have no idea what her condition is. The sad thing about it now in modern journalism, we only find out if they die or if a family member will volunteer that information. That's the only way. And even the family member has to have permission from the victim, which means the victim has to, you know, sign something that said you can release this information. Anyway, so we don't know the condition of the Nissan driver, but there were two crashes in a two-hour time period right around mile marker 22. Now, maybe you remember this. About 2 years ago, same spot. Someone got on the freeway going the wrong direction and hit someone else head-on, killed both of them on impact. 6 years ago, same spot, a guy driving a Hyundai Veloster. I don't know. I guess that's an SUV. Anyway, a few horses had gotten loose. One of them wandered onto the freeway, and, it was a black horse. It was 1:30 in the morning, so it was pitch black outside, and this poor person driving the Hyundai Her name was Jessica Dean. Had no chance. She hit the black horse on the freeway at full speed and was killed on impact. And yeah, mile marker 22, exit 22 there. That's a dangerous spot. Also in the news today, this one blows me away. Okay, so in Iron County, this guy's driving along, and he's kind of weaving in and out of traffic. So, and this is, you know, this is a right. A citizen called in. Another driver said, "Man, I just nearly got run off the road. This guy's driving really crazy. Can you do something about it?" So it took him a while, but finally the UHP located the guy. At this point, they're nearing the Millard County line. Iron Beaver Miller, anyway, Beaver County line. And anyway, they find the guy, but he's not breaking any laws at the time. And so the police officer says, "You know what? I'm just going to pull him over and have a little talk with him. Probably not going to give him a ticket. We're just going to have a little chat." So the police officer pulls in behind the guy, flips on his blue and reds. What does the guy do? Now, remember, they just wanted to have a little chat with him. What does the guy do? He guns it. I mean, he gets going so fast that the police officer, and by the way, the guy's name is Adrian Boa, B-O-A, had warrants out of Washington County. Anyway, he's going so fast that the police officer had gunned it up to 130 miles per hour. The guy was leaving him in the dust. The police officer estimates he was going about 150. So they lose him. He's off somewhere. He'd gotten off the freeway, and apparently they'd gotten some direction from one of the citizens. Said, "Yeah, he went that way," and they end up finding him off the freeway this time. And he sees the cops. They turn the lights on, and he takes off again. But this time he has hit something, and his tire has gone flat, and its right fender is kind of falling apart. And so. This time the police officer is able to stay with him, even though he's going really fast. Eventually, doing the pit maneuver, that's where they go up and push him so they spin out, and they're able to arrest the guy. When they arrest the guy, so he had warrants out of Washington and I think Salt Lake counties. So he had a couple of warrants for his arrest. But that's not why he took off when the police were originally going to pull him over. See, Mr. Boa had not a license, but a learner's permit that had been suspended because of, why else would you suspend a learner's permit, right? Because you did something wrong. So he didn't even have a license. He didn't even have a learner's permit. It was suspended. He had several THC vape cartridges in his car. THC is marijuana. It's illegal in Utah unless you have a medical prescription for it. He did not. And he said he also took off because of the warrants, and he had no insurance. So now he's facing those two warrant charges. He's also facing driving without a license. He's also facing driving without insurance. He's also facing reckless driving. He's also facing failure to stop, failure to yield for a police officer, and a whole litany of charges. Mr. Bo is going to be put away for quite some time. Millard County deputy is actually the one that arrested him, and I assume he was put in jail there. This all happened on Monday this week, so a couple of days ago. But I'm wondering, did they bring him back to Washington for the warrant? Is he in Iron County because that's where the chase started? And I don't know. I don't know the answers to those questions. But, I mean, what was he thinking? You know what I'm saying? Update on that house where they raided in Washington City. There were 27 people living in a house in Washington City, most of whom were illegal immigrants. According to authorities, 19 of the 27 were detained and transported to the ICE facility, in Henderson. Among them, a father and son have already been deported to Honduras. Five individuals were released on their own recognizance, and one person was taken into custody on narcotics charges. Officials say the investigation is continuing, and more details will emerge in the next few days. So, yeah. So I did the math on that. I was like, okay, 19 plus 5 plus 1, that's 25. Wait, there were 27. What happened to the other two? No update on that yet. We'll keep looking into it. There's a new fungus going around the area called Valley Fever. If you live in an area where there's a lot of construction, maybe, you know, when we bought our house over in Washington, this would have been, I don't know, 15 years ago. We don't live there anymore, but we were the first house in a subdivision that was going to have 90 homes in it. So we were there the entire time the other 89 homes were being built. And they did a pretty good job of knocking the dust down. But this new fungus out, this valley fever, by the way, it's described as a respiratory illness that can lead to hospitalization or even death if left untreated. Anyway, valley fever is the spores for this valley fever is in the dust. Now, and I was talking with a developer the other day. I said, you guys do a good job of keeping the dust down. He says, yeah, we spray water on it. But he said, we might have to stop that because water is becoming such an issue here in southern Utah. We might have to just deal with the dust. And that leads to a whole bunch of other problems like this valley fever. Catherine Walter told KUER that this major excavation of soil is also creating tremendous dust exposures. And like I said, one of the few ways to control the dust is water. And water is not something we seem to have a whole ton of here in So, Utah. So I don't know. Would you rather have it's one of those. Remember, you ever play that game or would you rather game? Would you rather have one of your fingernails removed by pliers or a needle stuck in your big toe? For me, that's easy. I can't feel my big toe. But for a lot of people, that's a hard decision. Anyway, this was a would you rather situation. Would you rather us use some of that water that is in such precious supply right now, precious commodity, to keep the dust down? Or would you rather have the risk of valley fever and fungus spores floating into your lungs because they're building stuff around you? Which one would you rather? I think about that, the Solus, I think it's called, up there on Highland, near Highland Park, up on Telegraph Hill. I would say they're one fourth built out, maybe. I mean, they have got a lot of houses to go. And the people that live there already are experiencing exactly what I'm talking about, the dust. How much water can you use? Are you allowed to use? Is this secondary water? Certainly, I would hope, at the very least, if they are using water to control the dust, please don't use potable water. Don't use water that we drink and need for showers and things like that. Please. I have been a longtime critic of the store Target because, well, political reasons, but also personal reasons. Target was on the forefront of the diversity, equity, and whatever movement. They came out with the transsex children's swimsuits, and put them at the front of their store. They're owned by a company that is known to be quite liberal. And then the personal thing, so when one of my sons was doing an Eagle Scout project, and those are tough because you don't have a budget. They don't give you any money for doing your Eagle project. Your budget is whatever mom and dad give you and whatever funds you can raise or materials you can raise by going around and asking for help. So this son of mine, and now he's 30, so this has been 15, 16 years, but he went to pretty much every major outlet in town asking for materials. His project had to do with, it was a painting something project. I don't remember exactly what it was, but because I had three sons do projects, and they're mixed up in my head at this point. But he went to Walmart. He went to Home Depot. He went to all the big boys, right? And ask for, hey, can you donate some paint, or can you donate some paint brushes, or can you donate some tape, or some? It was, you know, not major asks for a Boy Scout trying to get his Eagle to get a little bit of material from a big giant store. So he went to all these stores, and with one exception, the store said, yeah, sure, we'll help you out, and he got just about everything he needed for his project. And I was pretty proud of him. I'm not a salesman, and I don't think he was a salesman either, but you show up in your scout shirt and you give them the puppy dog eyes, and they usually give you something. Well, he went to Target. And he went to the Target management and he said, listen, I'm just about got everything I need for this project, and I just need a couple of more things. I think he was looking for, I mean, it was something really minor. Like, yeah, could you donate? I wish I could remember, darn it. Anyway, he asked for, basically he said, look, I need this, but if you don't have this, can you just, you know, whatever you can help, you know, contribute would be nice. And Target, the management of Target said, this is a local management of Target, said, oh, we don't do that. And my son was like, what do you, and I was there, and my son was like, what do you mean we don't do that? Said, oh, we don't give to Boy Scouts for Eagle projects. And I was like, wait, you don't, what, why? And they said, well, we believe, and this was a time when the Boy Scouts would not allow homosexual leaders. And they said, we believe the Boy Scouts are wrong, and therefore we're not giving a penny to the Boy Scouts until they change their policy. And I was like, what does that have to do with my son trying to get his Eagle project? They're like, no, this is a company-wide policy, a boycott against the Boy Scouts. And I was like, all right, have a nice day. I didn't yell at him, didn't get mad, but I have a radio show. And I have a son who was incredibly disappointed, and he did end up finally getting the things he needed. But I was just like, really? That's the hill you're gonna die on, right? You're gonna take a stand against 14-year-old boys trying to get some paintbrushes. That's what it's boiled down to, huh, Target? So anyway, I've been hard on Target over the years, and maybe too hard, I don't know. But I have to give a little bit of kudos to Target Corporation right now. They're U.S., but I think they're actually from, they're owned by a company in France, but their U.S. operations is in Minneapolis. And Target came out yesterday afternoon, I'm reading about it this morning, but they came out and said, listen, we are not going to raise our prices because of tariffs. They're like Home Depot. They're like, we're not going to do it. Walmart, if you remember earlier this week, said, maybe it was last week even, said, Donald Trump's tariffs are killing us. We're going to have to raise the prices of everything. And Donald Trump basically called them on and said, why in the world would you need to raise the prices on everything and pass the hit on to the consumers? Where do you acquire your gallons of milk? Where do you acquire your, you know, whatever? And Walmart's like, well, we get a lot of products from China. Okay, but what about the products you don't get from China? And Walmart basically, despite having one of their best quarters in company history this last quarter, Walmart says, sorry, we're going to have to raise our prices. Well, Target came out yesterday and said, that's a last resort for us. We will do everything we can to keep our prices exactly where they are, no matter what. And if we're failing, if we're going to go under, we might have to raise prices. But that's a last resort. We're not going to do it unless we absolutely have to. And kudos to, again, Target. They said, and by the way, the Target CEO said, quote, we have many levers to use in mitigating the impact of tariffs. In other words, they can change and maybe not employ quite so many people, or maybe not advertise so much. I mean, there are many different ways. If you really feel like tariffs are hurting you, there are many different ways besides just jacking up your prices across the board like Walmart said it was going to do. Also, kudos to Home Depot. They did the same thing. They're like, we're not doing that. We're not raising prices. Of course, Home Depot, I don't know that they get a ton of stuff from China, but you know what I mean. All right, 927 on KDXU. We've got Celeste Malloy coming up in just a couple of minutes. I'm Andy Griffin. I also want to refer you to the article of the week. I might have to save it for Friday, depending on where we do time-wise, but a fantastic article. I absolutely love it. The writer is a guy by the name of Jeff Minnick, M-I-N-I-C-K, and it's called The Useless Things Make Us More Fully Human. If we have time, we'll talk about that right now. Let's check weather.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, welcome back. 9:32 on KDXU. I'm Andy, and on the phone with me is Celeste Malloy, Congressman representing District 2 of the state of Utah. Celeste, happy birthday to you.
Thanks, Andy.
And I guess you decided, like most of us grown-ups do, I guess, anymore, it's your birthday. I might as well work a lot today, huh?
Oh, I've taken it to a new extreme this year. We voted all night, so there's only been 1 hour of my birthday so far that I haven't been awake.
Oh, my goodness.
And working.
See, the requirements on birthdays are supposed to be sleep in and eat cake. Those are the two things you have to do at some point, but I guess you're not sleeping in, so.
I haven't had any cake yet either, but it is still morning, so I've got some time.
Yeah, it's you're in D.C., so it's 11:30 there or so. So, yeah, you got time. It's probably too early here for cake. It's only 9:30 back here in Utah. So, all right, let's talk big, beautiful bill, Celeste. Is it big and beautiful?
It is both big and beautiful. We passed it early this morning out of the House. Now it'll go over to the Senate. But it's even more big and beautiful than it had to be. When we passed the budget resolution, the 11 committees that are involved, the total impact of their instructions was that they had to find $1.5 trillion in savings over the next 10 years. And we're sitting at 1.6 right now. And Ooh. One decimal point when you're talking trillions makes a really big difference. So
yeah. We've
got a little bit of wiggle room. And I think the conference as a whole feels pretty good about it.
When they reported on it this morning in the national news, they said the margin of, was one vote. Is that right? And I'm sometimes amazed that the Democrats all vote in lockstep, no matter what it is. If it's a Democrat vote, they're going to vote in lockstep. Republicans, maybe not quite so much.
Yeah, it's just a difference in the way we think. We don't do what leadership tells us to do, and they fall in line. But it passed, and that's the important part. We had two Republicans who voted no, one who voted present, and a couple of them who didn't show up. And we still got it across the line. It is the way we're implementing the economy that Trump promised. This is what people voted for in November. They said they didn't want the status quo. They wanted less spending and a stronger economy. And this bill is one big, beautiful effort to kick that off. It creates the framework for the better economy that we've been promising. The Trump tax cuts are extended indefinitely, and that one's really important because if we'd have let those expire, that's on average about a 22% tax increase for every household in Utah.
Wow.
And then, you know, I'm on natural resources, and we are one of the unique committees that instead of having to just go find savings, we got to go find revenue. So on natural resources, we get to vote for things like increased lease sales for geothermal energy and oil and gas and timber and things that make money for the Treasury instead of, we have to cut. We have to be more frugal. But it also helps when we can generate more revenue. You know, if you're talking about a family budget and you cut out SWIG every week, that's going to help. But yeah. If you get a raise at work, that also helps.
Right, exactly. And by the way, I did cut out SWIG. I'm working on that.
that makes one of us.
I haven't cut out soda completely, but I've cut out the SWIG runs and the $4 sodas. So I'm working on that one. Anyway, I don't have quite
as... Your listeners are all leaving right now. Nobody can believe what they're hearing.
Well, I don't have a stressful job as you do, and they don't have SWIG, I guess, yet in D.C., so you're kind of off of it.
Yeah.
Now, I had my political guy, Jimmy Kesson, came on, and he's like, it's 100% absolutely, completely critical that this big, beautiful bill pass in order for Trump's agenda to move forward. And tell us why that is. I mean, you already mentioned it's kind of the framework, but tell us maybe be a little more specific.
Yeah, so one thing that gets lost a lot in this conversation about reconciliation. So the big, beautiful bill is the reconciliation package. I've had some people be confused by that.
Okay.
It's just that reconciliation is not an exciting enough phrase for President Trump. He likes things with little pizzazz, so now it's the big, beautiful bill.
yeah.
In this bill, we can touch mandatory spending. And in our regular appropriations process, we can't. So usually we're talking about cutting spending. We're talking about just that 28% or whatever is still discretionary spending. In reconciliation, it's a rare opportunity. We only get to do it when the same party controls the House, the White House, and the Senate. And we only cut things when it's the Republicans that control all three of those. So when that happens, we get an opportunity to go in and make adjustments to mandatory spending. And everybody knows we can't fix our debt and deficit without touching mandatory spending. Now, this bill is not going to fix it. It's getting this big ship started turning in the right direction. So we're cutting waste, fraud, and abuse. We're keeping the tax cuts so that Americans are making money and can go spend money in a strong economy. It secures the border. It actually makes a lot of improvements for the military and our military readiness, and also for the life satisfaction of people in the military, so that we're treating them in a way that will keep them signing up, keep them in the military. We're unleashing American energy. You know, we made some minor tweaks to Medicaid and SNAP that will help keep those solvent into the future. And I sat there all night long and listened to Democrats, you know, get hysterical about we want kids to starve and we want people to die. And I don't think anybody wants kids to starve or people to die. But we have millions of Americans on Medicaid who are able-bodied and not working.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you put a work requirement for able-bodied adults between 18 and 64 who don't have dependent children. So I know a lot of Utahns are probably worried, like, what about stay-at-home moms? Stay-at-home moms are fine because they have dependent children. But if you are an able-bodied adult without dependent children, you should be working if we're helping you pay your bills and helping you make sure that you have what you need. And with SNAP, it's a requirement that states put some skin in the game. Right now, states have an incentive to put as many people on SNAP as they possibly can. When the states share some of that burden, then it helps cut back the waste, fraud, and abuse. They're a little more judicious about making sure that people who are on SNAP need SNAP. These are the kind of things that Utahns have been asking for and that Utahns like. And quickly, before I run out of time, I feel like I'm filibustering you, but
yeah, it's okay.
The land sale amendment that I got into the natural resources title of this bill got pulled out in the rules. So we passed the big, beautiful bill. It doesn't have the land sales in Utah that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks. I'm really disappointed about that. I worked hard to keep them in because we need public land for infrastructure in Utah. It's not in the reconciliation bill from the House. I don't know what the Senate's going to do, but I've got good support from leadership, my colleagues, everybody in the conference to help us move forward on that and make sure that we get the cities and towns in Utah the land they need for infrastructure so that we can have trails where people can go out and access public land, so we can get the water reuse plan implemented in Washington County, so we can have the roads we need for people to get from place to place. Those are the kind of things that are important to having a strong economy and having people feel confident in the markets and investing moving forward.
Celeste, you and I talked about this a couple of months ago, but you never thought you'd be where you are. And here it is, your birthday, and you've got no sleep. You stayed up all night working on this big, beautiful bill, and you've got people waiting for you right now, and some radio guy won't let you off the line. And I mean, are you going to make it? It sounds incredibly stressful to me.
It is stressful. I mean, it's the United States Congress. If I wasn't a little bit stressed, it would be a sign that I'm cracked in the head. But it's such a great time to be involved. You know, it's the beautiful part and the ugly part of politics that right now one person can make a big difference. And you saw that with our one vote margin on this bill.
Yeah.
But we're thinking big. We're planning big. We're shaking up the status quo and changing things that people have talked about changing for a long time but haven't been willing to change. And so, yeah, I'll take the stress. It's still a blessing to be here.
We really appreciate you, and I hope, I really sincerely hope you find some chocolate cake today, because it is your birthday.
I will make a point of finding some chocolate cake today.
Okay. Celeste, thanks for coming on. I know you got a ton to do. Thank you for talking to us for a few minutes, though.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
All right. See you later. Celeste Malloy, congressman from the state of Utah. Always a fantastic job. Man, I had no idea. She was up all night working on the bill. It's her birthday today. She's got people waiting for her. She said she had like 5 minutes to get over to. She said, and I quote, "I got a room full of sheriffs waiting for me." So I guess there's some other commitment, another commitment that she has. But Celeste Malloy, I don't think. Gosh, I want to say this. I have tremendous amount of respect for the women in my life, and even the women in leadership in our in our community, and I'm talking about Michelle Randall, and we're talking about Nanette Billings, and we're talking about some of these prominent women, Donya Jessup, that and Celeste Moy, that they don't give a little bit. They give all they can. They give all they have for their duties, and they don't, you know, most of the time don't get really they don't get compensated for the amount of time they put. And I'm sure Celeste Malloy would agree with Nanette Billings when she said that it's not a part-time job, it's not a full-time job, it's an all-the-time job.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thanks again to Celeste on her birthday joining us after staying up all night working on a big, beautiful bill. Holy smokes. Anyway, I'm Andy. Thanks for tuning in. Some breaking news. A plane crash in San Diego just moments ago. It was a private jet, and it crashed into a neighborhood. The good news, well, good news, bad news, everyone on the plane was killed. The good, that's the bad news. The good news is nobody on the ground was hurt. The plane, man, there's pictures. It basically, it took out a whole street full of cars, jet fuel, cars burned. It ended up running into a house, but the house was unoccupied, and nobody was in the cars that were burning. And like I said, fortunately, no one on the ground was hurt, but sadly, everyone on board the jet, and they haven't told me what that number is, if it's 1, 2, 3, 5, less than 8, I would guess, because it was a private plane, but everyone on board the plane was killed. That was in San Diego. Okay, in St. George, remember last week, man, I don't want to get into finger pointing or blaming or what anything like this, but a 9-year-old was killed when he was hit by a golf cart that was driven by a 12-year-old. St. George Police put out a post today just reminding folks about the law. The law for golf carts is pretty simple. You cannot operate a golf cart on at all. Maybe on private property, I guess, but on any kind of public street, unless you are 16 years old. You don't have to have a driver's license, but you do have to be at least 16 years old. Also, you cannot take a golf cart on a road that is faster than a 25-mile-per-hour road. You can't take it on the freeway. You can't take it on Bluff Street. You can't even take it on the boulevard. It has to be a street that is 25 miles per hour or slower, and the speed limit is 25 miles per hour for a golf cart. Also, you cannot take a golf cart on parks or trails, and all passengers must have their own seat. So you see sometimes people standing on the edge of the golf cart, or two people crowding into one seat, or that's illegal as well. Again, they're not trying to, they did a good job, and I'm not going to point fingers either about, you know, who did what, when, where, or who's liable, et cetera. All I can say is there are some very specific rules with golf carts. You must be 16. You must only be operated on a road that is 25 miles per hour or less. That implies a residential street, and you cannot use it in parks or on our many beautiful trails here in Washington County. So just keep that in mind. All right, article of the week. I did have a little bit of time, so I'm going to tell you about it. There's a guy by the name of Jeff Minnick. He lost his wife a few years ago to cancer. He's not that old. Picture of him looks like he might be in his 60s. I don't know his exact age. I could probably maybe do some research and find out, but all I know is this guy can write. He is a writer, and I'm going to read you just a couple of paragraphs from his article called "The Useless Things Make Us More Fully Human." This is Jeff Minnick. He says, "Every morning I'm up before dawn enjoying some coffee on my front porch and thanking my maker for another day. I've reached the age where that gratitude is heartfelt. Two or three times a day, I play a couple of games of solitaire. Often I'll read a few pages from some book I know well. Once or twice a week, I'll pick up the phone and call my good friend John to grouse about politics and the news. On Sundays, I handwrite a letter to two of my grandchildren, then do the same for two more of the kids the following weekend. These activities might be classified as useless things." Author John Howding writes in his essay on useless things, "Those things done for their own sake." Howding builds an excellent case for pursuing those useless things which are desirable in and of themselves. Chesterton would put it this way: we partake in useful activity so that we may have time and place for useless activity. Think about that. Why do you, I don't know, go to work? Why do you drive your car and buy groceries? Why do you, useful things. Things that we need to do to make life better, more efficient, so we have more available time. And when we get that available time, what do we do with the available time? This is pretty cool. This is Howding. He says, I propose that we write our own letters and sign our own cards during Christmas season. Can we do that? I think we can. You don't have to do it on parchment with a quill, although that would be really cool. You can use a pen and paper, and you can send it to your loved one, or you can hand deliver it to them. If you do that, you'll have done a beautifully useless thing. Yeah, we have technology. You could type, yeah, you could have AI create it for you, right? And then you could send it via email or text. Those are useful. It would save you time, but man. He says, that's how this starts, because in our struggle for freedom, it is the useless things that are most useful. And then he finishes his essay with, I sincerely hope that you find this essay utterly useless. Suppose you... Your kid asks you to read him a bedtime story, right? So you're putting your kid or grandkid to bed, and he says, hey, I'd really like to hear the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. Everybody knows that story, right? Jack, he gets the beans. He's supposed to go sell the beans, and instead, or he gets a milk or something. He's supposed to go sell it. Instead, he uses the money to buy some magic beans. And then he embarks on an adventure in which he climbs a giant beanstalk up to the sky, and there's a giant who... you think would fall through the clouds, but he doesn't, and et cetera, et cetera. So you're supposed to, your kid wants you to tell his story, a fairy tale of Jack and the Beanstalk. There are some choices you can make at this point. Now you're sitting there, your five-year-old or four-year-old or whoever wants a story. You're like, you know, I got a sink full of dishes. I've got a report I'm supposed to have done by the boss tomorrow that I didn't get done this afternoon. Boy, the living room floor could use a vacuum. I haven't cleaned the pool. Laundry needs folded. And I did want to watch the news tonight. So if you do the calculation in your head, all the things that you need to do means you're probably not going to get to bed. If you did them all by midnight and you got to be up at 6:30, that's not enough sleep. So you start going, okay, what can give? What useful things on this list? The floor needs to be vacuumed. The dishes need to be done. The laundry needs to be folded. It's got to be done. They're useful things. And you start going, okay, what can I get rid of? Man, those are all things that have to be done. I have to have that report done for my boss. But you know what? I don't have to read the story to my kid. Now, in the old days, you go, well, sorry, no time tonight. Go to bed. Nowadays, you go, you know what, I could spend 2 minutes looking on YouTube for someone reading Jack and the Beanstalk. And I could have YouTube or TikTok or whatever read the story to him. I could then, while YouTube is reading the story to my kid, I could go in and get those dishes done. It's very utilitarian, right? That's very smart. That's very good use of your time. I suppose. But suppose you instead select a treasury of fairy tales from the bookshelf, snuggle on the bed with your daughter or son or granddaughter or grandson, and read the story aloud. Given the two choices, this is what Chesterton might define as useless in our automated digital age, yet here we can see why the useless things are most useful. From such acts, love grows and flourishes. Again, I'm reading from Jeff Minnick. His article is on intellectualtakeout.org, and he makes a case for the useless things that make us oh so human. As a society inevitably becomes more captive of technology, let's fight for our humanity by embracing and practicing useless things. And at the end of his article, he said, yes, and I too hope you find my words here quite useless. I do, Jeff. And thank you for writing that. I only read maybe 30% of the article. If you want to read the whole thing, again, go to intellectualtakeout.org. Jeff Minnick, M-I-N-I-C-K, is the guy's name. I love his writing. I can think of three articles just right now off the top of the head that he's written, and I'm like, man, this guy is good. I love what he writes. I love his folksiness, his old school attitude, his reality. This is a guy who's been through, he lost his wife. He's been through some stuff, but he always delivers. Real quick, we got about 2.5 minutes left. I wrote an article not long ago about microplastics and how microplastics, you might have as much as a half pound of microplastics in your body right now. It's in your bloodstream, it's in your brain, it's in your antibody. There's microplastics everywhere. They're so small, they can be absorbed through your skin just by, you know, touching plastic or something you eat. And anyway, I've been really hard on plastic. I'm like, you know, plastic is going to kill us all. But when I was a kid, we lived by the DuPont manufacturing plant. It was down in Texas. And it's always smelled funny. And they were, you know, they were manufacturing plastic, basically. They were making it. And I remember back then, hey, Dad, what is this? Well, it's, you know, DuPont, and they make plastics. And I'm like, plastic what? He goes, well, you know, plastic stuff. And back then, we're talking about in the 70s. Back then, maybe plastic wasn't as ubiquitous. It wasn't everywhere like it is now. But if you think about plastic, you can, yeah, of course, there are bad things about plastic. You know, every time you see a picture of a turtle sea turtle with a 8-pack of plastic rings around its, you know, whatever, it tugs at your heartstrings. But you rarely hear any positive things about plastic. And I'm going to take these last minute and a half to talk about some of the positive things about plastics. Did you know plastics weigh about 5%, a 1 liter plastic bottle weighs about 5% of its glass counterpart, making it 20 times lighter and far easier to transport. I think in some ways we take plastic and we go, plastic is bad, and yet we use plastic all the time in everything we do. Go to the hospital. How much plastic is used in the hospital? From the syringes, the plastic gloves, plastic pretty much saved the world from malaria, especially the tropical area of the world from malaria. From nets that were made from a plastic derivative to the syringes that held the treatment for malaria that kept people from dying. Plastic, I'm not going to stop short and say plastic is the miracle material that saved the world, but plastic is close. It's done a lot of amazing things. And yeah, we need to be aware of microplastics and how they seep into our bloodstream, and we need to be careful, and, you know, but we also need to recognize the fact, and I think we do intuitively, that plastic is pretty darn important and has been pretty darn important in the development of the world and in the saving of us from a lot of things. Plastic, here's to you, my friend. Happy birthday, Celeste. We're out of time. Tomorrow it's open lines, kind of like today, only no Celeste interlude. But we'll be back here. Mello will join me as well. It'll be fun. Thanks for listening.